We do have a lot of questions that have come from participants. And as we transition as well, we would like to ask you a few more questions for you, the audience. But first, let's address most of the questions from participants. Paul, can you comment on the difference between the USDA GAP certification and the Global GAP certification? What is there a difference?
I don't know what the difference is. Sorry, I can't comment on that.
Okay, and thanks. So that you know, participants, we will post answers to these questions after the webinar in a Q&A section that we will post on our Ag and Uncertain Times website. So stay tuned, and we'll provide expand on the information presented. Does solid mix require any special food safety steps, and is it considered a processed food?
Salad mix is not considered a processed food, but it's almost always washed as it comes out of the field. You can see one of the slides that I had there. To prevent contamination, we're going to use a certain amount of chlorine per gallon of water there. I have to go back and look at specifically what it is because there are two different things there. But you want to have that water should be treated with chlorine, so that you're going to prevent any type of contamination that might be occurring somewhere in there. Where is it here? Okay, washing produce, half a teaspoon of bleach and 6 gallons of water, 5 parts per million of bleach. So that's all that's really necessary for a salad mix.
Okay, great. And a question about irrigation water. If you don't have control over it, how can you prevent contamination? Is there anything you can do to be proactive about it?
Well, if you don't have control of it, there, I don't think there's anything you can do to prevent contamination, but that's one of the most important things you can imagine. If you've got contaminated water and you're using that on produce, I mean, that's just like basic number one. I mean, that was one of the first things we talked about here is water. So you have to find out. You know, what's involved with that water. I mean, the minimum would be, as it's coming onto your farm, that you take a sample of that and test that and find out. And, of course, if you sample it, test it, and find out that there's no problem, well, then, you know, then you keep a record of that, and it's not a problem. But if you test it and you find out that it is a problem, then you really better go back and find out where that water is coming from and deal with that source of contamination.
Thank you. Yeah, I think producers should at least be aware and have a baseline of information that's part of their farm plan, you know, where the water quality is at before, you know, so that they know what remedial actions to take. One other question, Paul, regarding CSAs and fields and the field identification, would you put all the different field numbers for all the various produce in a CSA box inside the box? Or is it just to have the plan with the field? That information is not necessarily sent to consumers.
That's not information that needs to go to your CSA consumers. That's information that you need to keep a record of. So the traceability essentially is if there's some type of a problem in one of those CSA boxes, it's going to come back to you, and then you need to be able to go, okay, where did that come from? Where did that produce come from? So you don't need to put on into the produce box that goes to the consumer all of that information. Basically, just your name and phone number and your address. I mean, they're going to know that already because they're a member of your CSA.
And one other question, are you aware of any low-cost certification services available or resources to tap into that small-scale farmers for small-scale farmers with limited income?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Low-cost certification for limited income farmers. I know here in the state, the California Department of Food and Ag got a grant to help growers offset the cost of certification, and they offered a $200 kind of a subsidy for people who wanted to do that, but I'm not aware of any other states doing the same with what's going on outside of California here.
Is that for third-party certification?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not aware of any low-cost. You'd have to contact that list of all those different third-party certifiers and find out what they charge to do that. I mean, the basic idea here, what I just presented, is that and this is why all the small scale farmers got together in California and produced this PowerPoint presentation, and why we're presenting this today. If you follow, as a farmer, if you follow these common sense ideas here, you've got clean water, you keep waste out of there, you train your workers so that waste and these bacteria aren't getting on the produce, the containers are clean, by and large, you're not going to have a problem. And if you look, you know, in general at the must be millions of pounds of produce that's picked and shipped every day, and people aren't getting sick every day. I mean, it's not to say that it's not a problem. Of course, it's a problem, and we want to prevent the problem. But these basic common sense guidelines are going to go a long way to preventing any problem. And then if you download this template and take that and fill that out and document what you've done, that, again, is taking it to the next step. You've gone a long way for self-certification. I think that's going to meet the requirements for quite a few things, and possibly even including down the road where grocery stores or farmers markets or schools are going to say, well, what's your farm safety planning? Say, look, I've got something right here. This is what we do, and I think it's going to satisfy a lot of people.
And chances are that very small-scale, limited income farmers may be exempted for third-party certification. And I know, at least here in my jurisdiction, San Diego County, there are some produce distributors who are helping producers offset the cost of certification if they mandate it. So if you provide a unique product to them, they will help us, you know, defray some of the cost. One other question, Paul, regarding set-aside or setback. If you find fecal matter in the field during harvest, what is the suggested set aside, and is there any difference between crops? Does it vary by crop?
I'm not aware of any specific number. I know that for organic certification, the specific setbacks are 25 feet. That makes a lot of sense. It's not onerous. 25 feet isn't that much. You know, bacteria aren't magically just going to jump over, you know, unless there is, you know, some way of dispersal through, you know, sprinklers or water or something like that. So I don't know any specific numbers, but that's the general guideline that I would use.
And one final question before we let you go. Are these guidelines discussed, that we discussed today, applicable to all states?
Well, mostly, we're in California here, you know, sort of, you know, we grow a lot of produce and we produce a lot of stuff here, and so we've looked specifically at California. I would ask that question specifically to maybe some of your local extension agents, for those of you who are outside of California, and get them to respond to that. I really don't know what the rules and regulations are in these different states.
Well, my comment to that would be that these regulations are part of the Food Safety Modernization Act, which is a federal law, and from that perspective, they do apply, the regulations apply to pretty much all states. How each individual state is dealing or helping producers within that, their state boundary is a deal with this, is a different story, but, and for that, they should contact their State Department of Ag or a local cooperative extension and see what resources are there available locally for them to help.
Well, just as an example, here in California, we have some different state laws, and then, of course, every county has a county health department. Those county health departments may have further restrictions. So I think you're right. Yes, in general, this is going to cover, this is federal, this is common sense stuff. But there may be some specifics in your specific county or your specific state.
One last question. Can you give some examples of good practices? And if specifically with regards to produce washing, can you elaborate a bit on that?
Well, first of all, if the produce doesn't need washing, don't wash it. I mean, there are a number of things that, as far as I'm concerned, you would never wash. You would never wash raspberries or blackberries or strawberries. You're just, you know, asking for problems that don't need to exist. Temperature management and temperature control is extremely important, and that's why I would suggest a lot of you go to the website that goes to the UC Davis post-harvest handling. These bacteria multiply very rapidly under warm temperature conditions. So if you can get temperatures down, of course, it's not only going to be a food safety issue, but it's going to help maintain the quality of your produce a lot better as well. And then if you are using wash water to wash anything, that water be treated with chlorine. I think that is going to go a long way to preventing even a small amount of contamination getting out and spreading and getting all over the rest of the produce. And then, of course, just the common sense things of, you know, let's keep everything clean. Let's wash the baskets and the containers. And if there's a packing tables and things like that, let's make sure that that is all washed and clean, doesn't have any dirt in it. Rotten produce is removed and cleaned off of that. And basically just keep everything really, really clean. And then, of course, a lot of the other things that I talked about, you know, the worker health and safety and hygiene and then the livestock things and wildlife. I mean, there was a question up here about, you know, common sense things for wildlife. It is just common sense. You can't prevent everything, but you also wouldn't go into a field that has all kinds of droppings. Now, droppings here or there, of course, that's not a problem, but if it's really bad, then that is a potential problem.
Yeah. Thank you, Paul. In the interest of time, we are going to stop asking questions. There are other questions that were left unanswered, and we will try to answer those and post them to the website. So, Paul, thanks for a lot of good information, and I couldn't emphasize enough the idea of common sense. My belief is that most growers are already doing a lot of the good agricultural practices that were mentioned in the presentation today. What's required now is that we document those and put them together, you know, in the form of a plan. So thanks, Paul, again. We've seen a lot of interest on this topic, and if there is any specific area of today's webinar that you would like to see covered in future webinars or related topics, please let us know. Use the Q&A chat in your monitor, and we will try to address those concerns in future webinars.
Okay, thank you. Bye, everybody.
For more information, all the slides presented today and a recorded version of the audio and also a downloadable audio file will be available on our website at agriculturetimes.farmmanagement.org. So follow that link. And we also have put together a document that has all the links to the web pages that we mentioned throughout the presentation today. We ask you that you click on the highlighted bar on the file share window that posted on your monitor and download that file to your computer. Just click on the bar and download to your computer, and that way you will have access to all the web pages that were mentioned throughout today's presentation. That is all we had this morning. We thank you for participating. We appreciate the interest, and we hope to have you join us in future webinars. Thanks so much, and have a great day.